Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon if you're calling in from Europe. I see we have a few people in from Europe on the call today. So thanks for joining us. This is May 15, 2012, our Peer Insight Research Meeting. I am John MacArthur, President of Walden Technology Partners, and I'll be the moderator for today's Peer Insight. The topic of today's discussion is creating a single data repository for backup and archive in a shared services IT environment. We have a number of people on the call who will be speaking. Everyone's welcome to participate. If you're not speaking, however, please do mute your line by pressing star six. You can press star six again to unmute when you want to speak. The call is being recorded, and for those who are tweeting, please use the hashtag #WikiBon, WikiBon. So I'm really excited today. We've got with us Dr. John Myers, who is Assistant Professor of Medicine and Director of Technology at Boston University School of Medicine. Also with us today are David Floyer, who's co-founder and CTO of Wikibon, Stu Miniman, who is a senior analyst here at Wikibon, Bert Lattimore, who's a frequent contributor, Scott Lowe, also a frequent contributor to the Wikibon community. So thanks, and thanks to everyone else who has joined us today. Dr. Myers, why don't you set the situation up for us? When you took over as Director of Technology at BU School of Medicine, what was the IT infrastructure like? And then tell us sort of how you've changed that over your tenure.
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for the introduction. I wouldn't go so far as to say that we had, I wouldn't use infrastructure as a word at all to describe the situation here a few years ago. Here in academia, we tend to be very independent, and we had servers sitting under lab benches, we had data stored on little USB NAS server, little USB hardware NAS servers sitting on benches, there were servers stuffed in broom closets. There were desktop PCs that doubled as irreplaceable repositories of years' worth of data, and backup consisted of none at all, or copying it to external hard drives and leaving them in drawers, USB sticks, various and sundry mechanisms like that. So there really wasn't any consistent infrastructure or foundation to really manage data.
And is that because that's how IT was funded at the time, or how did it end up that way?
Well, one of the big problems we have in the research space, especially as academia, is that the technology really hasn't caught up with the way that we used to do research. In the old days, we kept a lot of data on notebooks, and data really wasn't research product really wasn't data. Data-centric. People ran gels of DNA and took pictures of them and things like that. We didn't really make a lot of data, so central IT would provide, you know, your average office document type storage system, and people would use that, you know, your standard Windows shares and such. But as technology changed in the research space, it really didn't, the central services that your typical academic IT organization provide really just didn't keep pace. Now we have instrumentation, for instance, high-speed imaging on confocal microscopes, which can generate terabytes of data in a single session. Whole genome sequencing, everybody is familiar with the big human genome sequencing project that took many years and billions of dollars. Well, today that has been condensed to essentially a desktop operation, and we can sequence an entire human genome. The problem is every time it's done, that's another 3 terabytes of data. So your standard, you know, Microsoft server shares for office documents just really didn't keep pace with how we do things in research. So people needed to essentially come up with their own ways of storing and managing all this data, which without any type of central support became this heterogeneous collection of machines and equipment sitting in various places all over the campus.
So what was the approach that you took then to try to, you actually created a shared resource across all the research departments?
I did. One of the well, first of all, I have to say, you know, when I came here, started as just a researcher myself, and I just complained about this. So finally, the chairman of medicine said, "Well, would you like to run the IT organization too?" So this is what happens when you complain. I didn't learn my lesson about that. But I said I'd do it on one condition, and that condition was that I'd be able to throw everything in the data center out. That we own and start from scratch. And that's exactly what I did. And so the foundation of my new infrastructure here is an EMC Isilon cluster. This provides kind of a central storage for all of our research operations. The advantage of the Isilon cluster over, you know, traditional, again, office systems geared to serving, you know, Word documents and Excel and other office productivity things is that it's meant to handle large streaming data in the big data space. And that's exactly what we do. So if you are, for instance, on an instrument in one of our core facilities, collecting a lot of data on the order of hundreds of gigs to potentially terabytes, you may then move to one of our analysis systems and start working on that data. So there's a tremendous amount of information being pushed across the wire. And we needed a NAS system that could handle that. And so the Isilon system does that. It's meant for big data. It's used by video production people, some of the big movie farms, as well as other large research institutions. So we felt very
comfortable. What's the size of that cluster today?
Say that again?
What's the size of that cluster today?
The size of the cluster today, we are looking at around 300 terabytes usable, and we're in the process of negotiating to add another 200 this summer. Our central IT department just bought one as well, bought two of them as well. They're on the order of also around 300 terabytes. So all in all, just in the Isilon cluster business, we're probably looking at over a petabyte this summer across the institution. BU as a whole has several petabytes of storage spaced out across a variety of platforms, including iBrix and XIV and GPFS as well. Again, it's a research institution, so there's a lot of systems in place, but a lot of data here.
Okay.
And one of the other big critical things that we liked about the Isilon cluster is our workflow in academia. So as a practicing scientist myself, the way we work is a little different than what people would expect. I call it academic ADD. We're always focused on the latest shiny object. So I'm working on my current project right now. I've got data on it. I'm doing analysis on the data. I've got a postdoc who's doing work on the data.
I'm sorry?
I don't know what that was, but I'll continue. We're hot on a project, and so you're working on the data. You're analyzing data. You're using the storage. The data is very hot. But once you get a paper out on the matter, or you submit a grant application, you move on to the next project. Well, what happens to all that data that you've just been tirelessly working on? Well, it just sits there, and now you're tying up very expensive real estate for this data. The high performance nodes on the Isilon cluster are not cheap, and I really don't like to dedicate stuff that's meant for high performance computing to essentially be a long term repository. So that brings us to the issue of, well, just how do we deal with the workflow, and how do we account for all this data that ultimately is going to get cold, and it's just going to sit there. And that's another reason I chose the Isilon cluster, is that you can have multiple tiers. And they have a technology called Smart Pools, which lets you create rules to dictate how data flows seamlessly between the different classes of nodes. So I have my high performance tier, and I also have an archive or nearline tier. And now traditionally you would have to get into stubs and such technology that leave behind somewhat of a mess to move data between systems. But because it's a single file system in the Isilon world, we have Smart Pools rules that simply say that if your data becomes cold, you haven't changed it or accessed it in some period of time, that data, those files will automatically be migrated onto the archive base or archive nodes. And from the end user perspective, you never know this has happened. Your files are still there. You don't see any stubs. There's no changes. And as a result, this frees up the high-performance nodes for what you're working on now, again, the hot data. And should you go back and revisit an old project, which sometimes happens, the Smart Pools rules will figure that out and promote that data back up to the high-performance nodes to give you that speed and throughput. So that kind of essentially lets us build in an archive into our system and gives us also a lot of scalability. The Isilon tools, the Isilon cluster comes optionally with a product called Insight IQ, which gives us very good visibility into what data is where and what type of data it is. So I've actually determined that I don't need to actually grow my high performance tier this year because most of the data is not hot. Most of my data is actually sitting on my archive nodes because the time to live, if you will, on the high performance nodes is actually shorter than I expected. People just don't analyze data or use data as much as I expected them to do. There's just a constant churn. So I'm actually growing my archive tier without having to invest in my high performance tier.
And this 200 terabytes that you're planning to add this summer, that's then for the archive tier?
Correct. That's pure archives here.
Pure archive, but within the Isilon cluster.
Within the Isilon cluster. It's a single file system. So from administratively and operationally, it literally is one file system.
So you use an Insight IQ to make this determination. If you didn't have that tool, what would your gut have told you? Would it have been something different?
Even without Insight IQ, we'd still be able to tell just by looking at the built-in tools that, wow, there's a tremendous amount of data on the archive nodes, and you're not seeing a lot of data on the high-performance nodes. So even without that, you would still see the same effect, although Insight IQ actually allows us to get a much better understanding of exactly what type of data that is. And what's contributing to the space, and we can show that it's actually a combination of genetics and genomics data and imaging data, cellular imaging data, that contributes to the bulk of that flow that moves over to the archive tier.
Do you have, I know when I was on the user side, we always had issues on chargeback systems, and what are you guys doing from a chargeback perspective?
That is a common thing in academia. I have to say that I'm a bit lucky in my position here in that Department of Medicine has its own endowment that we're very lucky to have what's called the Evans Endowment, and that endowment funds the infrastructure for this, so we don't have to go and recover a lot of these costs up front. Now, what we've decided to do is aliquot as much as we can to the users. But for users that need above and beyond, we do work with them with their grants, such that future grants, they write us into the grant as a direct cost to cover their storage. So it's not a bean counting firm that wants to account for every terabyte. It's much more informal. You need 30 terabytes, well, you've got a grant coming up. Let's write something in to defray that cost.
Okay, so you're serving it out of a shared services model, but you are able to charge back some incremental capacity associated with a specific research project.
Yes,
okay.
And it gives us enough flexibility such that we don't have to do that up front. One of the, as a member of the faculty myself, I understand that getting grants is very difficult. I have somewhere around here a couple rejections from the last round. It's very difficult. So last thing you want is to have a central organization telling you, you have to pay us. Where's the money before you get anything? We have enough spare capacity and flexibility that if somebody says, we need 20 terabytes today, in fact, the record was 90 terabytes, we can provision that literally within a couple minutes and then worry about how we're going to recover costs on it if they're able to get the grant down the road.
Do you have similar capabilities on the compute side as well, and are you using virtualization heavily?
We do. So we have a couple systems for that. Our part of my complete refresh of the data center was to get rid of as much as possible the physical footprint, replace it with a virtualized infrastructure. And so what we did is we chose Cisco UCS. Blade technology to be the foundation for that. We felt that the blades from Cisco had the best VMware integration as well as the most flexibility. in terms of a concept they call service profiles, which allows me to define, for instance, a ESX service profile and create that as a template such that when we buy a new blade or move an old blade into a new role, all my staff has to do is simply assign it to that service template, a service profile template, and it will just become an ESX server. All the virtual NICs and storage adapters and everything within the blades are provisioned, and everything is just pre-done. So it literally is a plug-and-play model, and we found that the blades to be the Cisco UCS blades to be the both space efficient and just extremely flexible.
Same question on the, I assume similar answer on the chargeback for this compute and networking components of the infrastructure.
We do. Again, we're
a little over-provisioned so you can allocate.
Correct. And again, we do the same thing so that if somebody needs it, we're not going to go after them for pocketbooks to be opened immediately. If they need it to get a grant or they need it to do their work, we're going to get that provisioned on the spot, and then we work with them down the road on future grants to try to recover some of the costs. This way, there's no red tape to cut, and it just makes it very easy. Most things can be done within a matter of hours to a few days to get things provisioned. And we have two tiers of blades. We have a base type of blade, which we use for general purpose virtual desktops and for servers, and then we have a high performance blade set that we use for more compute applications. Again, still virtualized, but the compute blades have 80 cores on them, and so we're and hundreds of gigabytes of memory, so we're able to create very large virtual machines for compute purposes.
So the topic of today's discussion is creating a backup and archive in a shared services environment. So how do you back up hundreds of terabytes and petabytes of data?
That's a good question. When we first started this, I started going the normal shopping route, investigating a variety of technologies. Including Veeam for the VMware side. I looked at Avamar, Computer Associates, and several others, your standard mainline enterprise backup products. And what I found was that I couldn't find a product that could do everything in my environment. And especially in academia, we have a huge mess of machines and different architectures, physical machines, virtual machines, a collection of operating systems, not just Windows, but Linux, Solaris, Open Solaris, and a few other BSD, so some bizarre ones are less common. And then we have the giant Isilon cluster, which presents its own challenge. The VMware environment is powered by a three-par SAN, and so one option there was certainly to buy a second three-par SAN, put that in our offsite data center, and replicate it. And the same option existed for the Isilon cluster, where we could have purchased a second Isilon cluster, put it in a remote data center, and replicated that as well using vendor-specific replication protocol. We chose not to do any of these.
So what did you choose to do?
A consultant of ours, who I've really only worked with once, out of the blue suggested talking to a local company based out of Waltham. They're a startup known as Actifio, which at the time and still does, claims to have some very novel technology to essentially reduce copy management so that you don't have to have separate snapshots, separate backups, copies upon copies of everything, offsite replication, everything is a copy. And when you're talking about such a large scale of data, the more copies of data you have, the more complicated this becomes and the more wasteful you are. So I had never heard of them at the time.
What's the name of the company?
It's Actifio, Actifio. Again, they're a startup out of Waltham, Massachusetts. I had not heard of them. I did a little quick Google search, and I found that there was some mention of them being this new great startup, but there was a lot of secrecy around them at the time, being a very new startup. And so our mutual consultant actually set up a meeting with them, and they came, and I actually had the chance to meet their CEO, and I was very, very impressed with with the technology. And we would have been, at the time, one of their very first customers. So I was impressed enough that I took a leap of faith on this one. Normally in academia, the first question we ask is, well, what other academic institutions use your product? And unfortunately, there weren't any with Actifio. I don't know exactly what customer we were, but I believe it's under 10. So I really had no reference calls at all for this. But their CEO came in and did a fantastic presentation, and we really dug into the underlying technology about how it works, about how you save copies from proliferating everywhere. And that was just the beginning of it. It also was positioned to be the only product that could deal with such a heterogeneous architecture. It could deal with the VMs. It could deal with physical machines. And it looked like that working together, we could get it to deal with the Isilon. So I took a chance, and I decided to become one of their very first customers. And I just do want to disclose at this point that our relationship has gotten much better, and I do have a financial interest in it as an advisor with the company. So I'll disclose that now. But we went with Actifio. And so we got this product. It had this incredibly simple interface, absolutely a beautiful streamlined Adobe Air interface. And after the initial install was done, my staff was using it in a day. So the way Actifio works is that it's a cluster of machines that uses some technology from IBM as the underlying storage virtualization hypervisor, if you will. And it's able to sit in band on the fabric, and it's able to capture deltas on the wire for physical machines that are on the storage. That results in very, very fast snapshots and compatibility with anything. As long as it can sit on the fabric, it doesn't matter what operating system it is. And then it has your standard vCenter plugins. So it's able to go out and use change block tracking within vSphere to get incremental snapshots from our virtual machines. And this is where the technology is different from anyone else. Traditionally, if you had snapshots, you'd have snapshots. And then if you wanted backups, you'd take backups. And if you wanted dedupe backups, you'd then dedupe your backups. And if you wanted replication, then you would replicate that. Well, what Actifio does is it's after you take these snapshots, and it doesn't matter if it's a physical machine or virtual machine, it then creates deltas of those. So the next snapshot that's taken is simply a delta from the previous snapshot. And it combines all of these deltas of snapshots to create an application-consistent backup and dedupe it simultaneously. So now we have our deduplication. And then you can choose to replicate these snapshots or these dedupe backups to another data center, which we do. And then now let's say you need a restore. Well, instead of making another copy of the data, say you want to restore for a test dev purpose. Traditionally, you would have to restore from tape or restore from hard drive, and you'd have to make yet another copy. But Actifio can present this series of deltas, if you will, live as a LUN to another machine without ever restoring it. It's computing all these deltas in real time on the wire. So if I need to restore something, it's really not a restore. It's just exposing this underlying architecture to another machine or the machine that it came from. And it literally is a couple seconds to set that up. A simple interface. I give you a wonderful example of how this could be used. We once lost a LUN. I had one of my staff members was working on the SAN, and I still don't understand how, but we managed to lose a LUN. And this LUN contained a bunch of VMFS contained a VMFS file system with a bunch of VMware VMDKs. So all of a sudden, we lost a bunch of virtual machines. Well, rather than having to wait for hours to do the restore, we simply exposed the backup LUN from the Actifio system to vCenter. We powered up the VMs again directly off the backup LUN. Yes, the performance is a little slower, but users were back in, things were back up, and while it was running, we storage remotioned it back onto the production storage, making the original copy again. So despite losing a LUN and losing numerous VMs, nobody at our institution ever knew it happened.
You mentioned the performance side of things. So is there a set of workloads for which this sort of snapshot restore
is appropriate? Are there places where you wouldn't use it?
Well, I think you could, there really isn't a place you wouldn't use it, because having people back in, if you have a a DR scenario right away, is certainly a lot better than not having them in at all. Now, yes, because you are computing deltas in real time, this is not going to be as fast as primary tier 1 3-parse storage. It is secondary storage, so you're clearly not going to get the same performance. But you don't need it for that long. You can storage vMotion things back onto the tier 1 storage, which is what we did. And as a result, it doesn't have to run that long on the secondary storage. In my opinion, it's better than having to wait in the traditional way. No users would get in until the traditional restore is completely done, and now you're back on the tier 1 production storage. So clearly, yes, running off of this is not going to be as fast. My understanding is that there's new hardware coming out for version 5, which is going to increase the performance as well. But all in all, no one ever noticed it, that we were running on this briefly during that actual scenario. And of course, we've done test recoveries as well and exercises to test it as well. And the performance is fantastic. It's really not noticeable under normal workloads that you're actually running on it.
This is David Flyer. Just one question on the types of workloads, et cetera. I presume you're mainly file-based in your setup, and that's reflected in the use of the Isilon. Is that the case?
So the Activio system is very block-based. It's not a file-based system, and this, I was talking about the VM environment with Activio. Ingesting a file-based system into it requires some type of translation between the file-based system and a block-based system. So it does require an intermediary, either a virtual machine or a physical machine, that can coordinate the copy of data from the primary NAS, whether it be Isilon or GPFS or IBRIX, into a file system that's contained and monitored by the Activio system, and that translates it into blocks. So you still need a way to do that, and that can be done over traditional protocols such as rsync or via some future tools that Activio is working on developing within the product as well. And either way, that does get files into the block space that Activio controls and monitors, and then is able to create these series of snapshots and deltas and be able to manage the copy. So you're creating one copy for backup, and that one copy then can be used for snapshots, for deduplication, and then if you want a second offsite copy, you can replicate offsite. But again, you're not having copies of big data everywhere. And because it's a file-based system, and we have awareness also from InsightIQ on the Isilon side, we can choose what we want to put into our backup side. And that's another critical discerning factor here in academia versus, for instance, industry, where everything is critical for the most part. Not all of our data is critical. A lot of it's derived data. You only really want to back up the original data. If you had to recreate data in a DR scenario, you'd recreate data. It'd be a little time-consuming, but I certainly don't want to replicate hundreds of terabytes of data, especially junk scratch data on top of it, which can be hundreds of terabytes in its own right, intermediary output files, for instance. So because it's a file-based system and not a block-based system, at that time where we copy files into the Activio file systems, we're able to essentially filter on what's important and what isn't.
You also mentioned that you had application consistent backups. How do you ensure that? Is that using VFS with Microsoft
yes.
packages?
So Activio does support your standard application consistency techniques such as VSS in the Microsoft world. It has an agent for Linux as well that can quiesce Linux, and of course VMware vSphere support using the vStorage protocols and API is able to get application consistency within virtual machines. And another critical thing that I find very, very attractive about the Actifio system and the reason I chose it is that, again, in my original model, where I would have had to have a separate three-par array, a separate Isilon cluster, and then a separate target to do VM backups using Veeam or Avamar, in my remote data center would have resulted in approximately $1 million of hardware on the remote data center just to deal with all the nuances and differences between systems. Essentially, what Actifio does is on our primary data center side is it collapses all of these systems into one stream. So it doesn't matter if it's blocks from a 3-par in VM, blocks from a physical machine on 3-par, data from file-based data from the Isilon cluster. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the operating system. All this gets virtualized by the Actifio system. And then on a remote side is essentially a agnostic stream, a single stream of deduped compressed data that represents our entire physical environment on the primary side, all combined, multiplexed, deduped against one another into one data stream and shot over there. So instead of having to have $1 million of different hardware on the other side, all I have to essentially receive that data is another Actifio server and a dedicated SAN backup target nearline storage over there.
What kind of capacity we're looking at the remote site relative to the capacity that you're protecting on the primary?
We are hovering now a capacity there pretty good. I'd say we're about 15 to 20% capacity of the primary side. We have enormous savings with the deduplication and compression, as well as just intelligent selection of what does get pushed over and what doesn't.
So you've got 85% less at the remote site.
Yes.
In terms of raw storage.
Correct.
Let me take a minute now and just open it up to the community. We have a lot of people on the call. I wanted to see if there's any questions from others besides the Wikibon analysts.
This is Scott. I do have one more question. You're using this for is this long-term archival backup for you as well, or are you doing something different along those lines for things that need to be retained for long periods of time?
Yes, this is again the combination of the Isilon tiering and the Actifio gives us that archive functionality. My long-term archive is simply adding nearline nodes to the Isilon, which gives us our on-site archive. And then the Actifio protects that archive by replicating it and deduping it against our entire environment, which, by the way, also gives us a lot of dedupe savings. Rather than having individual dedupe systems, we're able to dedupe everything against one another, which gives us the most savings. So that protects our archive. So yes, that is the archive for us right now.
I've got a question. This is Tim Sanders at OpenHead. What protects you against a failure of the DAR site? So let's say the worst happens, that it never happens, but let's say your primary site goes down, then you're running off your DAR site. What happens if you're then really unlucky and you lose your DAR site? Are you taping out in any way? How are you protecting your DAR site?
No, we don't tape out in any way. Our off-site DAR is a remote data center that's outside of the city. So we've got good spatial separation, and that's just a choice I've made that the odds of if both data centers are lost, New England has ceased to exist, and we probably have bigger problems than people's research data.
Fair enough. Okay, can I ask one more question? Just want to make sure I understand this right. The difference between using Actifio snapshots and using 3-par and Isilon snapshots, what's the difference? Just that you didn't have to have a 3-par and Isilon target on in the DAR site?
Well, there's a very big difference. If, for instance, I just made 3-par snapshots, or I had vSphere make snapshots and store them on 3-par using the 3-par integration with vSphere, those are snapshots. Those are on my 3-par, or potentially on another 3-par. I could replicate it to an offsite 3-par. So now I would need a second 3-par, but that's all I can do with them. I still need backup, right? I still need full backup, and snapshots are not backup. But in the Actifio world...
Why are the Actifio snapshots back up, but the 3-par snapshots not? I'm sorry if that's a...
Right, yeah. Because what happens is that on a periodic schedule, the Actifio takes those snapshots and combines them into a full dedupe backup. So we essentially go through the delta tree, recreate a final point in time, which is a full application consistent backup, and then deduplicate and compress that in the Actifio nodes, and then replicate that. So we are using our snapshots to create backup without having to do separate backup.
Thanks, Brent. Other questions?
Just a comment. That's not unique. There are systems from other vendors like SyncSort, NetApp that do similar things.
I have seen other systems, but I have never seen a system that's able to do it for all of these products. All in one. And again, from a dedupe, from a mathematical perspective on the dedupe level, the more you can throw into the dedupe, the more efficient it is.
Sure.
So the fact that we're able to combine our entire infrastructure into the system gives us, I think, the best dedupe savings that we can get. And also the ability to export these snapshots back to other systems for instance, test dev or recovery in real time is something that I have not seen done at that level or that simply.
Excellent. Thanks.
Question. Maybe I missed something, but if you're working at a block level, how do you dedupe? Because you don't know which blocks belong to which duplicated other blocks, right?
You don't need to.
Well, if I've got the same file replicated 5 times across the disk,
yeah.
I need to know which block is which block in which file.
Because the storage is virtualized, the Actifio side doesn't have any awareness of what the underlying file is. It will find common blocks that can be deduplicated. It doesn't need to know, it doesn't need to have awareness of what the underlying file system is.
Okay, so if I've got the same paragraph in 3 different files, but those files are actually 3 distinct documents, not copies of the same document, it's going to trash 2 of those copies?
Yes, as long as the blocks are the same, yes.
But then I lose 2 out of 3 documents.
No.
I've lost that paragraph out of 2 out of 3 documents, right?
No, when you need that data back, it's rehydrated. If you have to go through any dedupe algorithm, you have to go through a rehydration to undo that operation.
So it basically stores that block once and say, well, this block really belongs to these 3
correct.
Blocks.
Yes.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. That kind of makes sense, I guess.
Could I have the name or the company that you're calling from?
Oh,
your first
name? No, it's secret. This is Roger from GM. Dave knows me.
Okay. Thanks, Roger. Any other questions? One of the things that sort of comes to mind, you've got a lot of people who are accessing a lot of different data. How are you handling sort of privacy and data access issues?
Sure, that's a whole other area. So for general purposes, we're not talking about any protected data. The ISOLON provides adequate ACLs. And one of the other things that we love about the ISOLON cluster is that it's able to work both in the Unix level through NFS as well as play nicely with Active Directory and have consistent permissions, which certainly other systems do that. But this is very clean. It actually allows you to bind to multiple Active Directory domains and even have legacy Kerberos 5 domains as well, which here in academia we like to create authentication systems as much as committees. And so we have our ISOLON system plugged into multiple university-wide authentication systems, and we're able to get consistent permissions on the file system. So that provides your general level of security, whether you're accessing it through NFS, which can also do Kerbertized NFS, as well as through the SMB side. For more sensitive data here in the Department of Medicine, we certainly have a lot of data that's covered under HIPAA regulation, identifiable patient data. And that presents a whole other series of problems. It's just not good enough to put it on the ISOLON cluster because you still have very porous boundaries. All it would take would be somebody copying a spreadsheet that has couple thousand patient names and addresses and diagnoses onto a laptop and losing it on the red line. And as one of our peer institutions can tell you, that when that happens, you will make the front page of the Boston Globe and be fined $3 million by Department of Health and Human Services. These are things we do not want to happen. So what we've done is designed a fairly novel VDI-based system using VMware Vue as the core product, where we have desktops in the Vue side, which are very locked down by physical firewalls as well as electronic controls within the Vue environment, such that they have a little network that's unique to themselves. They can't get out of it. They can't access the rest of the campus networks. They can't access the internet. And there's a little virtual NAS server within that environment that has its blocks on the three part. Those blocks get routed through the Actifio servers so that they're backed up in real time. And this is actually based on this is Solaris running ZFS. So that people can log into these VDI desktops and they can access and they can manipulate their data that's stored on the three part, again, going through a virtual NAS server that then in turn goes through Actifio to back it up. But there's no way that they can get their data out of it. You can't access email, you can't access anything outside of this protected world. And we also have dedicated compute nodes within there that run our SAS licenses and other large compute so that people can log into a compute desktop and do high-performance computing against the data sets within the environment. But there's no way for them to copy the data out. And so it's very much locked down, so people can access it over VMware Vue sitting in a coffee shop on a laptop over the VPN, but I sleep well knowing that they can't take the data out of it and put it on their laptop and then have the laptop stolen.
I've got a couple of questions. First of all, while we're on that topic, there must be why couldn't you sanitize that data, just strip out the patient name?
So often we do. When we work with identifiable data, but you still need a place to, and that's the ideal way to do it, but you still need a place to then put that translation table. So if patient study number 123 actually corresponds to Jim Smith, you still need to put that table somewhere. And that table is very, very valuable. And if that table falls into the wrong hands, it's a very large deal for us. So that's where that table can live, so that, again, people can use our Isilon cluster to work with the de-identified data and just keep their translation tables within our environment. However, there are some studies that have to be done. There's no way to really de-identify it because of the nature of the study, medical records, for instance, that lead to in small patient populations can you can derive who it is. Or something like that. So there are cases where you just have to work with identifiable data where it doesn't make sense to de-identify it. Sometimes you get large identified data sets from the government, including the Social Security Administration, where a lot of the identifiers are actually part of the hypothesis, and there's no way to separate it. So you do need a place where you can store identifiable data, but again, in a way that's very hard to remove the data. And since the users can obviously not back it up themselves, again, Actifio handles the real-time backup of that environment, and it's seamless to the users.
And if you're using Actifio as a long-term archive, is Actifio applying retention policies for you?
We do. Yes, you can. Another feature about Actifio, which we really like, is called the SLA option. And the SLAs define when you take your backups, where you put your backups, how long you hold them, and you can define this at a per application level. It's very, very easy. It's graphical, and again, my staff was able to pick this up in just a day. You essentially just drag and drop different rules onto things, so you can say that this application, you want to take snapshots every 4 hours, you want to hold them for a week, and then expire them. And then once a day, you want to take your snapshots and create a dedupe backup from it. And then you want to hold on to the backup data for 6 months.
What's the difference between a backup and a snapshot? I think that's what's confusing me here.
Okay. A snapshot is exactly what you would think. A snapshot is an application-consistent capture of a machine, a place and time.
Yeah.
But it's always done with change block tracking. VMware provides it through vSphere on the VMs, So if I take a, if I have a brand new VM, or it's the first time I've taken a snapshot of it through Actifio, if it's a 30 gigabyte VMDK, I'm going to copy 30 gigabytes into my snapshot file in the Actifio. And then a few hours later, I'm going to take my next snapshot of it, and VMware is going to say, well, you know, only 50 megs changed, so I'm just going to give you the 50 megs that changed. Okay, so now I've just taken those 50 megs and I've written a delta within the Actifio side, and Actifio will now figure out, comparing to the first one, you know, what those changes are.
Sure.
And then I'm going to take another one, and now only 2 megs have changed. So now I have 3 in time. My final snapshot in time is only 3 megs, because it's only a 3 meg delta from the last. So that's still a snapshot, but that snapshot is only 3 megs. That is not
sure.
a backup. Right?
Sure.
That is a 3 meg delta. So a backup is now when we replay, if you will, the entire snapshot tree and recreate all the changes, play all the changes forward to get an application consistent backup, the original size of the machine, which would be, what did I say, 30 gigs, but now we also deduplicate that, so that is a backup.
Okay, so it's something like a synthetic pool that's being deduped from the, it's a synthetic pool created from a pointer-based, block-based snapshot. Okay,
yeah.
Back.
Great. Any other questions from others on the call today? No.
I have one question, which is, you placed it in this particular environment. What constraints would you see for using it in an enterprise environment? What parts would you think it would be good for, and what parts would you think it's not yet complete?
Are you talking about the Actifio solution?
Yes. Yeah.
The Actifio solution works very, very well with block-based systems. So VMware, physical machines that are attached through fabric to an underlying SAN, anything like that works fantastic. If you have a standalone server, in the current version, you just can't back it up like an agent would through a traditional backup system. That's something that they're addressing in an upcoming release. But you can't just back up right now a physical machine that does not have a fabric connection out of band. The integration with Isilon and Big Data is something that we're developing in partnership with Actifio in-house, and it's not an out-of-the-box solution yet that you can just buy Actifio and expect it to just back up an Isilon cluster out of the box. That requires a lot of local expertise right now to handle the interface between the file level and the block level through intelligent copying. But another reason we chose Actifio to work with is that we view them as a partner, and they're local, and so we've been actually working with them to take some of our ideas and implement them in the product at large. And that's something that's still a work in progress. And I think the file level support to deal with big data is something that we're going to see more and more refined over the next few months, 2 years. It's something, backing up big data in academic spaces is something that really nobody does right now. There isn't a product on the market that will go out and deal with petabyte level systems. Such as, again, the large Isilon and Ibrix type clusters. You just can't go in band on them. Isilon is InfiniBand, for instance. There's just no way, and it's a cluster, so you just can't stick a magic box in there like you can in a SAN. So really, they're on the market today that we're aware of, there really isn't a solution. And talking to our colleagues, if you ask, well, how do you back up your 800 terabyte Isilon cluster, the general answer is we don't.
Okay.
Or we replicate it to an identical cluster at great expense.
Hmm.
Is tape basically gone in your environment?
Tape is gone in our environment, and the whole university is moving to eliminate tape as well as much as possible. I think the days of tape are over.
And
by the way, that's not an easy decision. It certainly that makes people uncomfortable. There are people who still want to hold on to tape and don't want to let it die. But tape is in the death throes here.
And for the sort of more commercial side of Boston University, outside of the research activities, Are you implementing, or is the university implementing a similar approach for backup and archive?
The university is in the process right now of looking at our model here in the Department of Medicine, and the central IT group is modeling their offerings off of ours, and they are moving forward with similar systems and technologies that we've purchased. That has not yet been implemented yet, but that's only in the planning processes, and they are looking at the same vendors, including Isilon, Actifio, 3PAR, that we use.
And you know, in academia, there's a set of sort of constraints from the perspective of how you do budgeting, and there's some uniqueness to the applications. If you think over more towards the commercial world, are there anything, any advice for your brethren on the commercial side, or do you have any visibility to that?
How to get an academic get discount, for example.
Yes, I mean, I certainly enjoy sitting in my ivory tower and saving money on all my products with the very good discounts we get. But the commercial side faces the same problems that we face in terms of copy management and proliferation of backups. So it really doesn't matter if you're academic or commercial. We saved probably about $1 million in backup hardware by going with this Actifio virtualized solution, and again having to have dedicated targets for our individual systems, as well as purchasing an Avamar or Veeam type solution to deal with the agent side and VM side of things. I'm not an expert on the pricing structure on the commercial side. I suspect that, you know, obviously everything is more expensive. I don't know if the savings are going to be greater, less than, or equal to. I really don't deal with that, but I know there certainly would be substantial savings just through reducing the amount of storage you need on your backup side, eliminating tape, and reining in all of these copies so that you don't have to have separate storage for snapshots, separate storage for backups, as well as a proliferation of all the systems to handle those.
Good. Any final recommendations for the listeners today?
I think what I tell my own people here is it's rare that you find a vendor that can do everything, and so I always believe in coming up with a solution using the best of everybody. Which is why, again, I chose Isilon and Actifio and 3PAR. Believe me, EMC would want nothing more than to sell me everything they own, including their VNX arrays and their Avamar solution. And they tried to do that, and they made fantastic pricing packages to get me to do that. But I never would have had the flexibility or the elegance of the solution that I have by, again, choosing the very best of everybody, which is why I went with EMC for the NAS side. I went with Actifio. Actifio does one thing. They do one thing only, and that is backup and copy management. And then I went with the 3PAR for the SAN, feeling that it was much more advanced than the offerings that I could get from EMC. So I put this all together and combined with the VMware vSphere and Vue solutions. You know, I really feel I've gotten a very elegant solution that has gotten a lot of interest from outside people. By combining them in that way. So my advice to everybody is always to, while it's tempting to just buy what you're comfortable with from a single vendor or listen to take advantage of a vendor who wants to give you a bundle, you know, that's always the word, is bundling. And I say, you know, pick out the best technology. Look at it at a technology level, not at what the glossy sales literature is, and put the best technology together in the best way.
Great. Dr. John Myers, thank you for joining us today. Again, as a reminder, John is the Director of Technology at BU School of Medicine. We had contributions today from David Floyer, Tim Stammers. Nice to hear from you, Tim. Scott Lowe, Roger from GM. Appreciate the questions. Within the next 24 hours, we'll have... 48 hours, we'll have six research notes up pertaining to today's call, together with recommendations for users.
We invite all of you to, this is a wiki, so hit the edit tab and improve the pieces as you see fit. We'll also have a podcast of the research meeting available up on the Wikibon site within the next 48 hours or so. Please watch for upcoming Peer Insights events, and I hope you will join us. Thanks again for joining us today, and thanks for being a member of the Wikibon community. This is John MacArthur, President of Walden Technology Partners. Thank you.